This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside three-time Super Bowl winning executive and strategist Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni with you. Lots of NFL news and notes to get to today. Players signing new contracts, shifting teams. Also in college basketball, it's our second day of the first four. The real dance will get underway tomorrow. Plenty of college hoops to discuss with VSiN's own Adam Burke, who will join us coming up in a half an hour, as well as handicapper Harry Gagnon in hour two. And Michael, if last night was any indication as to how bad this committee messed up, then we're going to be in for a treat here. I mean, Virginia with 14 first half points. What are we doing?
Look, Will Hill probably was calling the committee and wondering why he's not on it. You know, I mean, he predicted this. And so, look, I think it's an embarrassment for the committee. It really is. What are they doing? You know, St. John's is sitting outside of this thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have to look at what KenPom writes and does. It's an analytical. It's not based on anything other than numbers. And so that's the purest form of at least the step of evaluation, right? And you also are quantifying the Big East on how it stacks up. So to let Virginia in from the ACC, to me, is really kind of, it proved out to be really disappointing. And I think, to me, it's a lesson that ignore the rankings, right? Mm. We see New Mexico as an 11 seed favorite over Clemson. I mean, that tells us a lot right there. I truly think, you know, Stormy, I don't know why I know it's not popular, but they should have a bookmaker in the room. They should have somebody in there that has done this for a living, that handicaps teams. I'm not saying they're going to set the line, but okay, ask them, what would you make the line here? Because I'll tell you this, the value of understanding value, and you're not looking at the betting market, you're making a huge mistake. Mm. I mean, we see it all the time. You know, this team gets this player, doesn't move the number. Was that a good move? Well, make them a little bit better, but does, you know, I think all those things are the variables we have to look at.
No question. You see that sometimes during the regular season too, right? It's like ranked team versus unranked team, but the unranked team is favored, but people are calling it an upset after the game's over. It's like, oh, was it really? Because they were actually favored by a touchdown in this game, or favored by 5 points or whatever it is. So 100% with you there. It's just one of those things that with Virginia specifically, they had no rhyme or reason to be in this position, to be in this game. And it's embarrassing for the committee. It's embarrassing for the sports. It's embarrassing for the ACC. 42 points they ultimately put up after 14 in the first half. They lose 67-42 to Colorado State, who wins and covers. The total was already 121. It goes well under at 109 in that spot. The Rams now getting 2.5 against Texas in the 10-7 matchup that's coming up on Friday. And Wagner also upset Howard straight up in the battle of the 16 seeds, 71-68. That total goes over. And we got two more games coming up tonight, Grambling, Montana State, Colorado at Boise State. And we'll talk over those games a little bit later on in the show. But let's get to the NFL, Michael, because the Jets made a move yesterday.
Yeah.
Mike Williams was supposed to visit the Panthers and Steelers, didn't end up leaving the building there in New York. He agrees to a one-year deal up to $15 million. Coming off, though, a season in which he only appeared in three games with that torn ACL. What'd you make of the signing?
You know, this is an interesting signing, okay, because we know Mike Williams is a good player. He once was a good player. And 4 years ago, he has gone from 15.8 yards per catch all the way down to 13. And he's missed a lot of games, right? So he's missed a lot of games over the course of that time because of injuries. And his down-the-field ability has kind of shrunk. But what makes this kind of move interesting, this is another one of the Jets' moves where they are signing players to high numbers on one-year deals. Kinlaw, Javon Kinlaw, $7.25 million, one-year deal. Tyron Smith, $6.5 million with a lot of incentives, whether he gets them or not, one-year deal. $15 million for Williams, one-year deal. So you're looking at basically almost $30 million on one-year deals.
Yeah.
And if any of these guys get hurt, Williams, who's prone to injury, Smith, who's definitely prone to injury, right? And Kinlaw, if he's good enough, to me, it's like they're putting $30 million into three players. Are they going to have a player at the end of the day? Look, I love Williams, but you can't deny the fact that his numbers have dramatically gone downhill. They've gone downhill since 4 years ago. haven't been able to get the ball. They drafted Quentin Johnson to give him an outside threat because maybe they felt like Wilson wasn't making plays. Williams. So I like Williams. I did like Williams. I'm nervous about this move because it's a lot of money for a one-year player.
Yeah, conceptually, I like the, you know, you got a 6'4", 6'5 receiver that's good in those one-on-one situations opposite Garrett Wilson, who's more of like the shifty back, and then you've got the guy with the catch radius. And I like Mike Williams a lot, but to your point, it's about health and about what you're paying these guys. And you're already, I understand, though, why they're doing one-year deals, because you've got essentially a lame duck coach. If things don't go well, Robert Saleh's out of there. Your GM's out of there. Aaron Rodgers, you presume, if things don't go well, is going to be his last year there. I mean, that's just my thought process. I look at this Jets team and I just can't buy in. You know, like last year I got fooled. I got tricked. I thought that things were going to work out for them. And obviously that's not how it played out. I'm not going to get sucked in again because their offensive line, they're retooling their offensive line because they've got a 40-year-old quarterback coming back on an Achilles. You signed this wide receiver who's coming off an ACL. Like, I can't do it, Michael.
No, well, he's played 41 games in 5 years, right? We know how many games Smith played, like 33 in three. I mean, they haven't played games. And here's what's got to worry you is you're counting on them, right? So when they signed Smith, they said, well, now they don't need a left tackle in the draft. Oh, yeah, they do, because they can't stay. He's not going to stay healthy. So now they sign Williams. Well, they won't draft a receiver in the first round. Well, they could, because he might not stay healthy, right? So to me, these are all Band-Aids. And if it goes perfectly to plan where there's no injuries, the Band-Aids will stick. Mm. But knowing that Smith's got back issues, knowing that Williams has been declining in yards per catch down up the field, and the team that knew him the best released him, couldn't trade him, that tells you a lot. And he took this deal immediately, right? Mm-hmm. He didn't even go to Pittsburgh or go there. So which tells me neither of those teams were willing to go anywhere near this deal, and he didn't want to pass it up. That's how you keep a guy in a building. You just basically say, hey, look, here's the deal. Either you sign this or not. I mean, we had Rodney Harrison in the Raider building getting ready to sign him, and the Patriots wooed him out of the building with more money, right? And so that's how you get a player. So the agent's not just sitting in the building, not talking to the other teams. They had their chances. They said, no, we're not paying that.
I will say, though, no shade. I mean, I guess it is shade to Randall Cobb and Alan Lazard. But as far as a wide receiver two goes on your team, if Mike Williams ends up being healthy and is able to deliver, like, that's a great upgrade at the position. And I hope that it works out. We'll just have to wait and see. Like, that's the thing that worries me is if there
could we title the Jets team this year? Is exactly the word you just used, if?
Yes, let's go. If
the New York ifs.
If healthy, fantastic. As far as the odds where they sit right now in the AFC East, they're plus 235, third shot behind the Bills, who are a plus 135 favorite, and Dolphins plus 210. They are minus 135 to make the playoffs, plus 110 to miss in the AFC 12-1 Super Bowl, 22-1. We had another interesting development in the wide receiver market. Jerry Jeudy, of course, had already signed with the Browns via trade, but now he's getting paid, Michael. 3-year extension worth how much now? Up to $58 million, 41 guaranteed. My goodness.
Well, I think you got to take a real look at the contract. I mean, yesterday we found out that Chase Young was getting 13 guaranteed. And now when the contract starts to come out, a lot of those are attached to rosters, whether he makes it or not. You know, they're tied. They're not like tying it all up. So I'm not going to be critical of it until you see it. But it does seem like, you know, they're really all in on Jeudy. They're all in on Jeudy. And there's really been no evidence based on his Denver tape to go all in. Right. I got what they did with Cooper. They took the contract from Dallas on Amari Cooper. I was a little hesitant of that. Cooper's played well. They haven't touched the contract. This one, you got to wonder, like, who are they competing against? Why couldn't they just let them play it out? I think sometimes you got to be able to be willing to say, let's just play this out. If the Denver Broncos made the mistake on Russell Wilson on the trade, that's one thing. If they let them play out the contract, that's another. That would have helped them. And I think this is the case here, too, because if in 2 years, if you're dumping Jeudy, why did we do this? What was the rush? Who were we competing against?
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, we talked about it a little bit yesterday. I always like the idea of finding that diamond in the rough who hasn't performed well and giving them a chance to see if you can make them develop and grow. What I don't understand is paying a guy based on potential and not results like this. Like, why are we giving this guy all of this money when we haven't seen anything yet? Ted Nguyen from The Athletic had a great tweet on X today. The Browns now have $230 million in a quarterback that's thrown 14 touchdowns in the last 2 years, throwing to a $58 million wide receiver that's never had a 1,000-yard season. Like, why is it so hard for scouts and people in these positions that are making these signings, why is it so hard for them to get off of that initial scouting of this player? Like, he was a first-round pick. He could do this, 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 and this, but we haven't seen it.
I can't explain it. I think there's no voice of reason. Everybody panics about, well, we better get this done. We better do this. And in reality, who are you competing against? Where is the voice of, where is somebody saying, well, who are we competing against? Like, why are we in a rush to give away this money? Like, I know they don't have any draft picks and they want to sign their team and it wants to look good. But I think, to me, patience is a virtue. There's no reason to just give away money until he earns it.
I'm with you 100% there. Again, Jerry Jeudy signing a 3-year extension up to $58 million, 41 guaranteed with the Cleveland Browns. And Mike Williams is now a Jet, a 1-year deal worth up to $15 million. Also today, we got a couple pro days going on in about 30 minutes or so. Caleb Williams pro day will get underway out there at Southern Cal. Texas today, Alabama today, Ohio State as well, which that'll be an interesting conversation in a moment. But to help us break it all down, Bucky Brooks, NFL Network, is going to join us coming up next. Stick around. We are just getting started here on the Lombardi Line. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you haven't already, make sure you check out the new and improved VSiN.com. Our website's got a refresh, a brand new look, enhanced navigation, and a mobile-first focus, but all that same great daily content. We are diving into all things March Mania, the NCAA tournament officially getting underway tomorrow. Make sure you check out VSiN.com for all the best bets and predictions. We are back on the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. It's also pro day season, a number of them getting underway today, most notably the big fish, Caleb Williams out at USC, set to get his pro day underway in just a little bit. To help us break it all down here, we welcome in Bucky Brooks on the Progressive Guest Line, former NFL player and scout turned analyst. You can catch him on NFL Network, Fox Sports, and a whole lot more. Bucky, everybody very excited to see Caleb Williams do his workout since he didn't participate in the scouting combine. What do you think we can expect from him today?
You know, like, I'm just excited to see him play because I think it's been so long since we've seen him play that the hype keeps escalating over who Caleb Williams is. And so we hear the term loosely applied, generational talent, even though a generation is like every 15 to 20 years. And I don't know how many generational quarterbacks can pop up in that period when you have Pat Mahomes, but I want to see if he's special. I want to see if he's special from an arm standpoint. How special is the arm? What does it look like coming off his hands? Can you tell about the velocity and those things? He'll do all the trick shots and all the stuff that we see all these guys do at pro day. But I really want to get a feel for how special his arm is compared to the elite quarterbacks that we see. How does his arm compare to Pat Mahomes and Josh Allen and those guys that we rank up there as quarterbacks? Is it really up there? Because I think what people don't talk about, he's only 6'1". He's 215 pounds. He's a good athlete. I can't say that he's a great athlete. So what are his superpowers? Because when we talk about him being an elite, a number one overall pick, you typically need to have some traits that kind of validate that stuff.
You know, Bucky, you took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, he's 6'1", and there are times on tape when you watch him, he plays like he's 5'10", and he kind of sinks down, and he doesn't – he plays smaller – than his actual size, and his inability to protect the football has to be a concern as you go in there. We love to call every quarterback that comes out generational, even though, as you indicated in your tweet, it's very hard. There's only two guys from the over the last 19 that have been picked that are starting, and one was the seventh pick, was the last pick overall in the draft. So I think, will you be surprised if his arm strength is, you would say, above average, but not elite?
Yeah, I, in fact, I'm going to be honest, like, Mike, I'm still struggling with this because I'm like, man, am I the outlier? Because I think he's a really good player. I don't know if he's like what he's been hailed to be. And so when people talk about Pat Mahomes, I say, I don't see Pat Mahomes. I see maybe more Russell Wilson than Pat Mahomes. And that's not a bad thing, but I think we just need to make sure we kind of set our expectations right for who he's going to be. Because when he goes to Chicago, the way that everybody's talked about him, they expect that when he touchdowns in the Windy City, that they're off and running. They're going to win 13 games. He's going to put them on the back and those things. And I don't know if he's really that kind of player.
NFL Network's Bucky Brooks joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. And you even just said when he's in Chicago, which I think is interesting because there have been a lot of people and analysts that have tried to make the argument, especially recently for Jaden Daniels, that they think he's actually the best quarterback in this class. Do you think that it is as easy as it gets to just say, we are the Chicago Bears, we are taking Caleb Williams number one?
Well, I think, like, and Michael can validate this, like, you never really want to listen to the outside noise when you're working for an organization. But if they go counterculture and they don't take Caleb Williams, you talk about the clock ticking on them right away if they're wrong. They almost have to take Caleb Williams because the masses say that. I would say that Jaden Daniels outplayed Caleb Williams and Drake May this year, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be the better prospect. I think Caleb Williams is going to be the pick, and then they're trying to do everything in their power to make sure that he has success. That's why we've seen the signing of veteran receivers, veteran center, running backs, and those things to give him a chance to have success right away.
Bucky, the receivers, you know, there'll be 17 of them picked in the first round if you listen to the mocks, maybe 20, you know, because there's so many number one receivers out there. It's ridiculous, you know. It's just like they just grow on trees. But there's a lot of debate from I'm talking to people watching the tape. Marvin Harrison Jr. is not working out. Now, he's a good player. There's no denying it. Mm-hmm. But this neighbor's kid looks like he's got more special to him than Harrison. And I know that's you're not allowed to say that because everybody has Harrison going first and he's the best player in the draft. But do you see it that way?
Look, he has juice now. I mean, and when you talk to the people at LSU, look, it's funny because it's a similar conversation to when they had Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. And they talk about, hey, Brian Thomas Jr. might be the more gifted player, but Malik Nabers is the dog. He's the ultra-competitive player. He's the one that when you get the ball in his hands, he makes it happen. They talk about him loving the game, like an absolute passion for the game and those things. Yeah, look, I think it can be a consideration. And, like, whatever you think about Marvin Harrison Jr., he is super talented. He kind of reminds me of Larry Fitzgerald in terms of his play style. But you have to understand, like, when people know the dad and know how quiet and how isolated the dad is, what he's doing now kind of plays into what his dad was in terms of Marvin Harrison, kind of like a loner and whatever. And that may not play for every locker room, particularly when you're making decisions and you're trying to do the chemistry experiment on your thing. I can see a world where Malik Nabers is the first off the board because you're like, hey, I love the kid. I love the competitiveness. I love all this other stuff. I've seen the testing or whatever. Marvin Harrison Jr. is kind of, I would say, hidden behind like, hey, you see me play. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. That's kind of culture. Normally, back in the day, you never could be a first-round pick without testing. This is a little different.
Well, and it's even extending to, like, his pro day, that because he's not working out today, as Ohio State's supposed to have their pro day today in Columbus, no head coaches, no GMs are expected to be out there at the Ohio State pro day. Like, it's got to have been a hot minute since we've seen something like that at a program like that, and it's because Marvin Harrison Jr. isn't a part of it.
Yeah, it's a big part of it. And because he was their elite prospect, like unlike most years where Ohio State had a bunch of elite guys that were coming off the board, so you kind of had to go there. He was kind of like the ball of the show. Like he was the bell of the show. He's what everyone wanted to see. When he decided that he's not working out, it's not really a reason for me to go there when all these other pro days that are going on around the date. And so sometimes your best player will work out so that his teammates will get good looks from high-level executives. Marvin Harrison decided not to work out, and so some of his teammates are going to miss out on opportunities to kind of show their wares in terms of real decision-makers.
Bucky, where are you on J.J. McCarthy? Where are you on Drake May? And are you buying because Drake May was coached by Josh McCown in high school, that the Vikings are trading up to get him?
I won't say that, like, that's all that, but there is some, like, substance to not only the Josh McCown thing, but Kevin O'Connell really likes him. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are people that dig into the college tape, and I hate it because my alma mater, they ask, like, why were the college coaches asking him to do certain things? Like, some of what they're asked to do in college doesn't match up. What I can tell you about Drake May, the more you talk to him, the more you fall in love with him in terms of what you want your franchise quarterback to do. Yes, sir, no, sir, kid, high intelligence, great pedigree because all of his brothers played high-level athletics at the collegiate level. His dad was a three-sport standout in high school. He has all of that stuff. Because Josh McCown may know him, he can be an even bigger advocate in the building when they begin to talk about, like, no, this kid has the right stuff. If we bring him in, developmental program, we have Sam Darnold. I could see that having some legs, but I don't know if that's enough for them to move. But it does help that you have someone who knows him at a lower level, who also understood and can kind of speak for him, like, hey, he didn't play his senior year of high school because of COVID. Played behind Sam Howell his freshman year, so he didn't play that year. He's only played 2 years, so maybe we grade him a little on a curve, knowing that he has developmental stuff that needs to happen before he can get on the field. I think Josh McCown could play that role with being an advocate, but I don't know if it's enough for him to say, hey, we need to move up and get this kid.
Drake May's pro day will be next week, as is LSU's for Jaden Daniels. Michigan and J.J. McCarthy pro day coming up on Friday. Last thing for you here real quickly, Bucky, is we've got about 90 seconds left. You tweeted recently that you feel the NFL has a quarterback evaluation and development problem. There's no other way to spin it. Why do you feel so deeply about that?
And I think Michael will agree with me on this. When I was in the league in the 90s, like with Mike Holmgren and those guys in Green Bay, they took quarterbacks and they took their time with quarterbacks. Like at one time on the roster, it was Brett Favre, Doug Peterson, Ty Detmer, Mark Brunell had been through there, and they invested time in the quarterback. There was a quarterback school that took place over the summer where it was just the quarterbacks before everyone else came in. They took their time. They taught them how to play. They didn't rush to get them on the field. So now everyone is upset with what high school and colleges are doing to the quarterback. But you only can coach what those systems, those leagues bring to you. I think coaches have to be more adaptable. They have to be willing to meet the players where they are. And they can't make the excuse like, hey, he can't play. Because what you're doing, you can't throw all these quarterbacks away. You have to play with somebody. I just think people have to dig a little deeper when it comes to looking at the experience, how long people have played in college to give them a chance to have success.
Bucky, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate you. Enjoy,
great work,
enjoy
Bucky.
Williams Pro
and
Day.
I agree 1,000%. 1,000%, Bucky. Great work.
Hey, thanks so much, guys.
On the other side of the break, VSiN Managing Editor Adam Burke joins us to talk bracket busters and best bets from this year's NCAA tournament, plus why he's fading this Mountain West team in the opening round despite their regular season success.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you're anything like me, you're doing whatever you can right now to dominate the brackets. Turn your picks into profits this tournament with our VSiN Pro March Mania betting guide. Inside the guide, you'll find expert strategies, insider tips, and in-depth analysis. It'll give you an edge you need to outshine the competition this tournament season. From underdog upsets to championship predictions, the betting guide's got brackets from hosts and experts, NCAA tournament betting trends, and of course, best bets for every game and round of the tournament. Don't miss out. This is a game changer. Download the VSiN Pro March Mania betting guide today at vsin.com/madness. That's vsin.com/madness. And who better to chat with than the man responsible for putting this bad boy together, Adam Burke, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line, VSiN Managing Editor. 95 pages, a quick turnaround from Selection Sunday. Like, are you still tired? How are we doing, Adam? Welcome in.
Yeah, it's a very busy time of year, Stormy. Michael, good to have you. Good to have me, whatever it is. I don't know. All these days are running together here. You know, I'm still doing Major League Baseball stuff as well. So, you know, we got that going on too. I got 9 more previews left to write for team previews. So it's a busy time. I probably have carpal tunnel at this point, but, you know, it's a great time of the year with March Madness for sure.
But you love baseball. Look at all those balls behind you there. So it's got to be a labor of love to go through all the baseball guide, right, Adam? I mean, you love it, and it's something that's important to you. You know, it comes naturally, right?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, it's definitely something that I enjoy doing, but, you know, a little bit weird this year, of course, with the season starting early this morning with that game with the Dodgers and the Padres that, you know, I don't really know how you're supposed to handicap those games over in South Korea, but, you know, look, I mean, I'm just trying to get, it helps me organize my thoughts for the season too. And I think that's something that's really beneficial for people that are out there trying to handicap multiple sports. Hey, maybe you're not published somewhere, but write stuff down, organize your thoughts. That'll definitely help you with your handicapping process.
Yeah, the full MLB season getting underway more. Next week. Go ahead.
No, I agree with Adam, Stormy, because when you write it out, and like that's one of the benefits of writing a column and two during football season for me is it kind of lets you clean up your thoughts and put something on paper and then read it and see, oh, do I believe, is this really what I want to say? I think it's really good. It helps you make decisions too, right? I think I was doing that during the football season in terms of, do you want to make this bet or not? And then I just followed you, Stormy, on all your teasers because you were so hot. So we just went that direction.
Sometimes, every now and then, things work out for you, girl, Michael. But appreciate Adam Burke joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Quick reaction to last night's action. We talked about it briefly at the start of the show. Hopefully yesterday what we saw from Virginia wasn't a bad omen for what's to come the rest of the tournament as it pertains to the committee's selections with what we saw with Virginia. But are there any games in this opening round or maybe even in, as the first four continues today, that you're excited about, teams you think could make a run?
Yeah, I don't know if I would say that, you know, any of the teams in action tonight can make a run, but I do like Colorado tonight. I think Colorado is just a much better offensive team than Boise State. And if you look at a lot of the metrics, you know, they're much better at getting inside. They're much better at getting to the rim. They had 190 more made close twos than Boise State did. And to me, I think that's a really important statistic when you talk about games being played in neutral settings that these teams have never really played in before. So I like to look for teams that get to the rim, take those high percentage shots. Boise State was a bottom 30 team nationally in terms of defending field goal percentage on those close twos. So I think Colorado can get inside very effectively tonight and take care of business in this game. But as far as what we saw last night, I mean, look, the committee put Virginia in. All of us were right about Virginia. Everybody who critiqued that decision was proven, you know, they were validated last night with how bad the Cavaliers looked in that game. I also think Colorado State's a pretty good team. You know, we'll find that out when they take on Kansas here tomorrow, but I think that Colorado State's a pretty solid team. Virginia is not, and we kind of got the result that we should have expected last night.
Yeah, I mean, I think that really you got to wonder what the committee is looking at when they do something like that, when, you know, KenPom has them rated as the 73rd team, and they leave out St. John's, who was 25th moving forward. So where are you on Houston? You know, they were the second adjusted defensive team in the country, but they're not healthy. Where are you as they enter the tournament?
Yeah, you know, Houston, I mean, obviously an elite defensive team to be sure. Offensively, they can get into some big lulls, and that was a concern that we had with them last year. That's a concern that I think a lot of people have with them this year. The thing I will say is this. You know, they were a mid-major up until this year. Now they're in the Big 12. And we know that the selection committee tries to summer in mid-majors a lot of the times because they simply don't have the fan bases. They don't draw the eyes. They don't draw the dollar signs, all the things that the selection committee is looking for. But this year with Houston in the Big 12, they got a real nice draw in the South region. I think the South region is pretty weak, really, outside of Florida, you know, outside of Kentucky, who a lot of people like, and outside of Marquette as well. And all of those teams are in the bottom half of that bracket. So I think Houston is actually set up really, really nicely to make a solid run here, despite some of their obvious offensive flaws. I think the committee looked at it and said, hey, we're going to reward you for being in the Big 12. So you've got the best draw of any number one seed, as far as I'm concerned.
So you mentioned like in Colorado today, fading Boise State in the Mountain West. You're fading another Mountain West team today in the 8-9 matchup in the Midwest, Utah State. Why do you like the 3.5, feel comfortable laying it with TCU?
Yeah, I just think TCU is just a more physical team. I think they're a longer team in terms of their athleticism, in terms of the size that they have on the roster. I think they're just kind of battle-tested being in the Big 12. I realize that, you know, the Mountain West is really good and they got six teams in and all of that. And Danny Sprinkle's done a phenomenal job with this Utah State program. But I just think TCU, you know, the way they attack the offensive glass, the way they force turnovers, you don't get a lot of in-your-face pressure type of defense in the Mountain West. But TCU will give that to Utah State. And I think that's a matchup problem for them. Also, I don't think Utah State is very deep. You know, if Great Osabor gets into any kind of foul trouble whatsoever in this game, it's a substantial drop off down low for Utah State. And against a team like TCU that can fully take advantage of it, I think that sets up well for the Horned Frogs. So nothing against the Mountain West. It's not Mountain West bias or anything like that. Not only are they underseeded, I think they got some tough matchups as well, including this one here for Utah State against TCU.
Adam, as you look over the top 16 teams, 1 through 4, which is the one or two teams that you think on Sunday night we're going to say, yep, they weren't quite as good as we thought they were?
Ooh, they weren't quite as good as we thought they were. That's a really good question. I think Baylor's a team that, you know, really disappointed me in the Big 12 tournament. I thought they would shoot the ball better in the tournament, and they did not. I mean, this is a team, you know, Scott Drew also, he has the title team, but he's a guy who kind of has a knack for underperforming in this tournament. I don't think they lose to Colgate, but I would not be surprised if they lose to New Mexico. Clemson is a team I don't trust. Brad Brownell is Rick Barnes, Matt Painter level bad in the NCAA tournament. No one really talks about it. So I do like New Mexico over Clemson. And I think New Mexico's very live against Baylor if they get into that game here coming up this weekend.
I do too. I just worry that New Mexico's becoming a popular pick, and that usually doesn't bode well for me, at least personally, when I'm backing some of these teams. You are an Ohio guy, Adam. So how much of the bias did you remove when you made this Akron pick over Creighton? You're taking the 12.5.
Not only am I an Ohio guy, I'm an Akron alum. So go Zips in this one. Fear the roof for sure. But ultimately, to me, this just comes down to, again, Creighton is a jump shooting team. And despite what they did in the tournament last year, where they went on a pretty good run, Greg McDermott was basically a 500-ish type of coach straight up in the NCAA tournament. And I think a lot of it has to do with Creighton's shot selection. They don't really get to the rim a whole lot, despite having a big-bodied guy in Kalkbrenner that they should get the ball to a little bit more on the inside. They take a lot of jump shots. They take a lot of threes. And I think in a setting that you never played in before, that can be pretty difficult. And I do think Creighton wins the game. I don't think Akron pulls some ridiculous upset or anything like that. But I think 12.5, 13 points is just a little bit too big here in this game. Akron is a team that really aggressively gets out there and tries to defend the three-point line. They're a little bit reckless at times, to be honest with you. I think that's something that could kind of bother Creighton a little bit. And also, Enrique Freeman is a really good player down low, double-double machine for the Zips. I think he'll get his. I think they're a very experienced team. That'll help them in this type of setting. And also, this game's in Pittsburgh. The Rubber City is about 2 hours away. I think Akron's fairly well represented in this game, and I don't think Creighton will be. So maybe that gives them a little bit of extra juice here in this one as well, getting double digits. I just think it's a couple too many points.
We had Will Hill on the show yesterday, and he was talking about taking the under in the first half because of the arenas, because the adjustment to the rims and the size and all that. Are you buying that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very tough to shoot in these unfamiliar backdrops, especially because, you know, you have some teams that come from these really small conferences that maybe play in gyms that seat 2,000, 3,000 people, if that. Then some of these mid-major teams maybe seat 8, 9, 10,000. Now all of a sudden you're playing in an NBA arena or an NHL arena that seats 18, 19, 20,000, and it may not be completely full, especially for some of the early games. So I think those early tips are really difficult. You maybe get one practice on that floor at best. You're practicing at local colleges and high schools and all of that. You maybe get a shoot around on that floor. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's a really difficult thing for these teams, especially when you consider the nerves of the moment, the jitters that you have. Yeah, I think first half unders are definitely a good way to look in this tournament and in this tournament in general.
Adam, you're awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate
awesome
you.
Awesome work, Adam.
Thanks, Stormy and Michael. Take
Thank
care, guys.
Thank you, Adam.
And again, make sure you check out that March Mania betting guide. Adam and the crew put so much work into it. 95 pages, great insights to help you put your bracket together and make some of those good early round or futures selections. We're going to hit the break here real quickly, but when we come back, we're closing out hour one, celebrating the start of spring by breaking down which last place division teams in the AFC could be poised to spring forward in 2024. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DraftKings customers. Earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager, and you can earn up to $2,500 worth of bonus bets your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now. Use our code Lombardi when you sign up. That'll make you earn $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. right now. Also, remember, with so many bottles to choose from, it's easy to find your favorite at Total Wine & More, all at the lowest prices for over 30 years. Find what you love and love what you find. Total Wine & More. Please drink responsibly. Must be 21. This is The Lombardi Line alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. And it appears one too many teams, Michael, took the term fall back to heart this NFL season a little too much. So with the calendar turning to spring yesterday, our wonderful producer Elliot had the idea of looking at some teams who could be poised to spring forward, some of our cellar dwellers, teams that are at the bottom of their division. And let's start in the AFC, because this is really interesting looking at some of these teams that finished last in their respective divisions, because we've got a whole lot of new coaching staffs and new pieces to take a look at. Let's start in the AFC East with the New England Patriots, who for the first time in a very, very long time, do not have Bill Belichick at the lead of the ship here. Gerard Mayo, the new head coach. Elliott Wolf, new top executive. Mac Jones is on his way out. We've got Jacoby Brissett in and a number of other additions. Do you think that the Patriots could spring forward in their division following a 4-13 season?
Well, you know, as I've been said many times on this show, that they were not a 4-13 kind of team. The kicker and the quarterback really let them down. Their defense was good, and they signed a lot of their defensive players back, you know. So we know they're going to be better defensively. They're going to add a lot of draft picks. And if they get the right quarterback to this team, they should spring forward. They should. You know, there's still a lot of work to do. You know, they went from saying – what Gerard Mayo said, we're going to spend cash, we're going to go hard on it. They didn't do that, right? They went back to, remember, this is a team over the last 10 years that spent the least amount of money of any team in the National Football League. They ranked 32nd in total cash spending. So they kind of fit the pattern that they've always done in the past. They've signed some, they've lost some. But for me, it comes down to the quarterback. They had poor quarterback play. Remember, Bailey Zappe got waived. No one claimed him. And he ended up being a starting quarterback for him. So that tells you how badly they were playing at the position.
And Mac Jones went from a rookie of the year candidate his first season to just taking step back after step back each of the last 2 years. As far as where the Patriots sit in the hierarchy of the AFC East, it's a competitive division at the top right now. The Bills are a plus 135 favorite, followed by the Dolphins plus 210, the Jets plus 235. The Patriots 25-1 in the division. So the long shot by far here. But do you think that they are really that far as the bottom team? Like, do you think that they could leapfrog New York Jets?
Well, I mean, look, if Rodgers isn't 100%, if the New York Ifers, right? That's what we're going to call them, Ifers. If the Ifers aren't having all their ifs come through, they're going to have problems. I think this is a lot closer than you think. Buffalo lost a lot of players too here now, right? And there's still conversations about Diggs. Miami took a bath in free agency. Now, they tried to come back with a lot of guys. And, you know, there's a great chart by Over the Cap where he kind of evaluates all the moves based on money, you know, and he puts them into quadrants. In the bottom right quadrant, Miami is by far the team that has lost the most value in terms of contracts, right? Baltimore's in there, Seattle, you know. And so I think, to me, I'm not sure that it's automatic that the Miami Dolphins are going to be able to duplicate the season they had as they splintered out on offense. So this is kind of packed kind of tight. Can the Patriots go from worst to first? That would take a lot for me to believe that, especially with Josh Allen still being the best quarterback in the division.
Yeah, and the Dolphins were in the driver's seat all season long to win the division and squandered that opportunity late. Let's go to the AFC South. Another coaching change. Mike Vrabel now in a consulting role with the Cleveland Browns, and Brian Callahan steps in as the head man, showing a belief in their quarterback, Will Levis. Also brought in Mason Rudolph, Malik Willis still in that room, Tony Pollard in the running back room coming over from Dallas, but obviously lose a big name in Derrick Henry and Azeez Al-Shaair, among others. What do you make of the Tennessee Titans and their placement in the AFC South coming off a 6-11 year?
You know, I think they'll be picking in the top 10 again next year. Okay. I'm not buying Levis. And, you know, when you look at their team and what they've did in free agency, Kenneth Murray, is he going to be good enough to play linebacker to fill in for Shaier? I don't know. I mean, Shaier could run. Murray is a problem for them. I think when you go through their whole roster, right? Yeah, they added Calvin Ridley, but are they going to be better in the offensive line? That remains to be seen. This line needs a lot of work. Now, they hired Bill Callahan, but defensively, it's still problematic. So I don't see this Tennessee Titan team making that giant step forward because I haven't seen Will Levis play to the level that I think you're going to need to take a Mother May I step forward. So for me, this is really about Levis and their lack of offensive line. And then we haven't even gotten to the defense, right? Last year, when they lose Jeffrey Simmons, that whole defensive front was in trouble.
We'll see what they're able to put together. I did like the offensive line hire and Brian Callahan's dad coming over from Cleveland as well. I mean, that's an area that they obviously need significant help in. The Titans are 11-1, so still the longest shot in the AFC South. The Texans favored to repeat, followed by the Jags at +210. In Los Angeles, welcome back to the league, Jim Harbaugh. The Chargers coming off a rough year. This is a team that year in and year out has high expectations that they never seem to live up to them. Had a lot of cap issues this past week they had to figure out. So while they are able to keep Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa, they have to move on from Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Austin Eckler also out of there, Gerald Everett also out of there. But if you got Justin Herbert and Jim Harbaugh, you got a chance. What do you think about the Chargers? Can they spring forward in year one with their new head coach?
Well, you know they can. Now, I'm surprised you're here today. I thought you might be at the Harbaugh garage sale that was going on in Ann Arbor yesterday. Did you see that bad boy? Like, seriously? You're going to have a garage sale? Or maybe that's where Cream was calling us from when he was on the phone. I would have liked to have gone through some of those items, huh?
Absolutely. But I loved that, by the way, just how subtle that was. He's like, you know, I was talking to my brother-in-law, Jim, yesterday. I'm like, oh, yeah, so casual. Jim Harbaugh, by the way.
Yeah, you know, and having a garage sale. Yep. Well, he's probably out there at the garage sale. Amazing. Look, I got a lot of faith in the quarterback improving because Harbaugh's a really good coach. And the competitive fiber that comes with Harbaugh is significant, right? If you read anything today, Wright Thompson wrote a really good column on Caitlin Clark about her competitiveness, her similarities to the Jordan, to the Kobe, to the people, the Bradys, the people that have this rare competitive fiber and spirit in them. And I think to me, this is what Harbaugh brings to his team, and the personality of himself rubs off on his team. Now, it's not going to happen overnight. It's not. But it's going to take shape fairly soon. And they really haven't lost anybody, right? Mike Williams has not been healthy for them. That didn't really hurt. Keenan Allen was a good player. There's no question about that. And they would have liked to have him back, but they're going to have to replace him. He is a replaceable player. Good player, but replaceable. So I think, to me, they're going to get better in the offensive and defensive line. They're going to make the quarterback play better. And that's all it's going to take to kind of move up a little bit, because Denver's not very good. The Raiders still have a long way to go. No quarterback on offense. So, you know, can they catch the Chiefs? I don't think so. But it's hard to three-peat. I know that.
Yeah. I am just excited to see this team have a little oomph, have a little physicality, have a little mental toughness. I think that's something that they've lacked the last handful of years, and I think Jim's a guy that can bring it. To your point, the Chiefs, an odds-on $2-plus dollar favorite at this point. The Chargers are still the second shot, though, in the division, in that AFC West. Last but certainly not least, the AFC North. The Cincinnati Bengals had their season essentially lost when Joe Burrow went out with a season-ending injury. They finished the year 9-8, a tough division in that AFC North. Looking at what they have done, have they done enough to spring forward? Is Joe Burrow's health enough as well?
You know, it's like trying to. They were playing chess last year without the queen. And now they get the queen piece back, which can do everything for the chessboard. I think it makes a huge difference. And I think they've had a really good offseason. They've improved their defensive secondary tremendously, which was a huge weak spot last year. They went way too young. I like the Bengal team. I'm not sold that the Browns have improved. We don't know about Nick Chubb's knee. We really don't. We don't know where Pittsburgh is going to be able to duplicate 10 wins, even though Tomlin seems to figure it out every year. And look, Baltimore has suffered severe casualties in free agency, severe. Now, they've got young players behind every one of those guys they lost. If they're right with those evaluations, they're just nothing's going to happen. But if there's a little bit of a grind, a little bit of a kind of a scale you've got to climb, you know, a learning curve, then I think that could be problematic. And I think Cincinnati's going to be back in the driver's seat. I like Cincy tremendously here. Look at the odds, 165. So does the book. I think it's a good number to play now, because I think Cincy had a good offseason. and they're going to continue to get better.
Yeah, very little separation from them and the favorite Ravens. Baltimore +115, Cincinnati +165, the Browns at 6-1, and the Steelers with Russell Wilson and company +850. But again, those odds have been significantly cut down from 12-1. We're going to hit the break. We are coming back with hour two. What's on Michael's mind? Lots of pro day discussion ahead. We'll be right back.